Well, Eric out of West Texas sends this email, says, I was outside with my son working in the front yard when my son said, look, Dad, look at that bird. I stopped, looked up. I could barely see it. It was so high in the sky, it was hard to keep a line of sight. It was a calm, clear sky. But looking at it, I could tell this was a huge bird because of the height. It was gliding, and it would flap its wings once or twice. Like your guest Ken just said, it kind of looked like a dinosaur. You never know. We'll be back with your calls, final hour on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Ken Gerhard with us and your final phone calls as well. What lies ahead for you, Ken, in the field of this crypto research?
Well, of course, I'm always collecting reports and, you know, hoping that, you know, perhaps by my appearance tonight that some of your listeners will get in touch with me if they have any experiences or encounters they'd like to report. But I always have ongoing field investigations taking place. And, you know, in addition, I have a few public appearances coming up. I'm appearing at the Parasota Paranormal Conference, for example, next month up in Minnesota. So I'll be doing some lectures about cryptozoology and just, you know, getting out and gathering reports and seeing where they lead me.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Oak Park, Illinois. Robert's with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Robert, go ahead.
Thank you, George, and thank you, Ken.
Sure.
Ken, I've got a two-part question. First part for Ken, the second part for George. Ken, do you believe that I'm sure you've seen the Patterson tape, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Do you believe that was Mrs. Patterson?
In costume?
Yes, sir, in costume.
I don't think anyone could have pulled that off in terms of a costume, personally. I mean, if you think of, you know, you think of the time period when that was made back in 1967. I mean, costume technology was just not that advanced at that time. And, I mean, the subject in the film has such a natural look to it. I mean, the muscles are flexing. It seems very massive and natural, which I honestly don't think that could have been pulled off at that time. In fact, there are Hollywood special effects experts who say even today it would be very difficult to pull that off.
Okay, you don't think that walk was more like a human walk when that Bigfoot was walking? You don't think it was more of a human walk?
Well, it's very human-like, but that piece of footage has been analyzed quite a bit by different physical anthropologists and, in fact, some biolocomotion experts in Russia and England and the United States. And several experts are in agreement that the movement of the subject in the Patterson film is not human.
Okay.
That its knees are always bent at a 15-degree angle. You can see an outward swing of the knee in motion, the exaggerated arm swing. All of those things working in concert would be impossible for a human to fake.
Okay. And, George,
yeah.
What happened to the information that Art Bell had about the gentleman that killed a Bigfoot and buried the Bigfoot?
That was Bugs, I think that was his name, wasn't it?
Right, I believe so. And Art, do you believe Art is ever going to reveal where this supposed Bigfoot is buried? And I believe it was more than one Bigfoot that was shot.
There might have been two.
Right.
We've been trying to find Bugs. Can't find him.
I see.
So I would probably say no, probably will not be revealed unless we can stumble across the fellow.
I see. Good show, George. Thank you.
Okay. Let's go to Las Vegas. Bill's turn on Coast to Coast, west of the Rockies. Hey, Bill, go ahead.
Hey, George. Great show tonight.
Thank you.
You too, Ken. Hey, wanted to talk to you about these flying creatures, okay? What he's talked about, it seems that they're probably some type of prehistoric creature that's been left over. At least that's the way it comes off to me. Now, I saw something myself here in the Vegas area that I'm not sure whether it's a leftover species or something that's been manipulated.
What'd you see?
It was back in 2008 in October, nearing Halloween. And, man, I've never believed in monsters until that night. And I was at my apartment complex, and as you know, the Vegas Valley, we have a lot of hills. Well, out on the west side, up as you get into the lakes area, you're up on a hillside, and you can see down and see the strip. Well, there's a open field area next to the apartments I used to live in, and a friend of mine, we used to go out to the the barbecue area.
Yeah.
Because it's all open out there. And we'd stargaze and sit there and talk about the day. And this open field is really observable from where we used to sit. And something took off from that field. It only took a couple flaps. That's really what hit it with me when I heard him talking about that they could flap and then, you know, coast along. Only took a couple flaps to get it up off the field.
Jeez.
And it got to about 35 feet, went over the tree line that we were standing next to, and this wingspan had to be at least 17, 18 feet.
Was it scary or just inspiring?
I'll tell you, I've driven truck. I've seen California condors. It's a big bird. Mm-hmm. This thing was larger than any condor, and I can't relate it to any kind of species I'd ever seen. It really shocked me when I hadn't seen the movie Jeepers Creepers yet. But when I saw that movie, it just sent me for a loop because that's just about what the thing looked like.
One day we'll catch these creatures, Ken, won't we? That's a great story.
I'm telling you.
Thanks, Billy.
Thanks, Bill.
Great story. What, don't you think one day we'll find them?
If they are real physical animals, then yes. I mean, logic would dictate that at some point someone would trap one or shoot one or find physical evidence of one. I think that that's a fair presumption. I think certain cryptids are more likely to be discovered than others. You know, we've been talking quite a bit about Bigfoot, but I certainly think that, you know, the amount of contact that these things seem to have with human beings, that at some point we would you know, be able to prove that conclusively. Water monsters and, you know, things like the Loch Ness Monster may be a little bit trickier because we're dealing, you know, with something that's completely out of our element. And you have all the logistical issues and problems of searching under the water and trying to figure out how to trap or contain or catch something that's really enormous. So, but yeah, I firmly believe, George, that we will have physical evidence, you know, for some of these creatures at some point.
Wichita, it's Katie's turn. Hi, Katie, go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Hi.
Ken, I guess, George, you could possibly answer this too, but Ken, is it possible that the reason why there is no physical evidence of El Chupacabra, Loch Ness, Bigfoot, slash Yeti, and so on, because maybe they're appearing to us for a brief moment in time from another parallel universe or another dimension?
That,
and it's kind of out there, but
that's come up before, kid.
Yeah, you know. That's actually a very good question, and it opens the door to a concept that many cryptozoologists are not comfortable with, the notion that some of these creatures are not wholly physical, that they are somehow interdimensional, slipping into and out of our reality at will. And this would most certainly explain why they're not seen more often, as well as we can't come up with physical evidence. So I would say that we, you know, we can't discount any possibility.
Why do you say that some of the cryptos aren't comfortable with it?
Well, cryptozoology, you know, at its root is, you know, it's basically considered to be a branch of zoology. You know, so like many scientists, cryptozoologists, you know, don't like to entertain explanations that are a little bit supernatural or maybe a little bit, you know, unnatural in origin. You know, we like to deal with the here and now with physical evidence. And of course, when we start talking about interdimensional and time slips and wormholes, we're getting more into physics and some of those concepts as opposed to, you know, straight zoology.
Well, we talked just a little bit about the Jersey Devil. Let's get into that creature one more time, if we would. What do you think that might have been?
Well, wow, people love the Jersey Devil.
They
I get
do.
Asked about it all the time.
Almost as much, if not more so, than Mothman.
Oh, it's a fascinating story. The Jersey Devil, of course, is been reported in southern New Jersey, which is a very rugged, wooded area, you know, unlike the urban sprawl to the north. The descriptions of the Jersey Devil are very interesting. It almost seems to be a chimera, you know, a mishmash
cross,
of different
yeah.
types of animal characteristics with bat-like wings and a snake-like or devil's tail.
Yeah. And human also in a chimera, right?
Yeah, in some ways, you know, almost like a traditional gargoyle or something. And of course, there is a famous legend in that part of the country about a curse, and you know, that the Jersey Devil was actually the 13th born, you know, devil spawn of this Leeds woman. So it's a great urban legend. I don't really know if there are that many reports, or really if there's that much evidence, though, that the Jersey Devil is an actual animal or creature. I think it's definitely something unusual.
No doubt. Let's go to Charles in Austin, Texas, one of our favorite towns. Hi, Charles.
How's it going, George?
Okay, thank you.
Well, I grew up in South Texas, moved to Central Texas when I was a teenager. Throughout my youth, I've ran across multiple black mountain lions. When I've talked to Texas Parks and Wildlife, they tell me that they're more than likely just escaped exotics.
Mm-hmm.
But the one that I did see near Canyon Lake was really large cat, black. It was about 200 yards away. And I'd say sitting straight up in the field at the shoulder, it was probably about a 4-foot shoulder height off the ground.
Wow.
Very large cat. I mean, of course, it was pretty far away, but we did get its attention by, you know, making cat noises at it and trying to get it to respond to us. And it pretty much looked at us like, you're boring me, and it ran away off into the woods. But I also had a theory about the blue dogs.
Okay.
My theory about the blue dogs, I mean, I don't know much about the creature itself, but I've noticed in the state of Texas in the past couple of years, I've been seeing creatures coming back that have been next to void from this area for a long time. And my theory is it may have something to do with the migration of the fire ant. As the fire ant has moved north, a lot of ground-based, ground-dwelling creatures are starting to return, like quail and lizards and even tarantula.
You mean to eat the ants or to get away from them?
Well, as the ants have moved away from Texas, the ground-based animals are starting to make a recovery. The fire ants.
Oh, I see what you mean. Where'd the fire ants? Where'd they go?
They're migrating north into the rest of the United States, according to recent maps that I've looked at.
They're just like leaving the state. That's interesting. Mm.
Slowly, and I think perhaps maybe this blue dog was just something that, as Texas back in the old days was fairly, you know, wild area, wasn't really ran across very often, and as we developed and the fire ants moved north, if this is a animal that burrows into the ground, perhaps, just my opinion, perhaps the fire ants had all but decimated it, and now that they've moved somewhat out of Texas, this creature starting to make a comeback, whatever it is.
What do you think of that, Ken? Thank you, Charles.
That's very interesting. Certainly there are many layers to the mystery, so that could explain some of that.
These creatures must be pretty prolific because we're seeing a lot of them. We're getting a lot of cases, as we said, of dead ones, some being shot. They must have a very fast breeding cycle.
They seem to be, and particularly at this time of year, I've noticed that I receive a lot more reports during the summer, so they're definitely more active. But I'd like to go back quickly to something he was saying about the large black cat, because,
sure.
You know, there are jaguars that are native to Mexico and that occasionally cross over the border into South Texas and Arizona. Now, most of these jaguars are presumed to be spotted jaguars. However, there are black or melanistic jaguars in Central America. So it has been theorized that, you know, a black jaguar could roam perhaps as far north as the United States. And, you know, they are very massive cats compared to, say, American mountain lions, which is kind of what he was describing. So, you know, just a thought.
You never know. You never know. Up next, Julie in Minneapolis, first-time caller. Hi, Julie.
Hi. Is this George and Ken?
You got it.
Yes.
Hi. Okay. So I've been freaking out since like 1:32 a.m., but I think I calmed myself down a little bit. So you spoke about thunderbirds.
Yeah.
And I'm 21 now, and I've been telling the story to all my friends since I was about 10 or 11 when I first saw this bird. And when I thought it was a dinosaur, and some of my friends say, "You're crazy." Some of my friends believe me. And when Ken was describing the Thunderbird, that's exactly what I saw to a T, a feather bird with a long wingspan. It looked prehistoric. The head shape was just very odd.
Must have scared you big time.
No, it didn't scare me, though. I was, like I said, I was 10 or 11 at the time, and I was by the river, and I was picking up a rock at the time, and I felt like something was nearby. And I look up, and I see this bird, and it was like nothing I've ever seen before. And the reason that I was so shocked by it and continue to say this story to my friends, whether they think I'm crazy or not, is because I just remember it for so long. I can still remember it to a T.
Was it flapping over you, Julie, or just where was it?
It was soaring. Like I said, I was by the river or the lake, and I was going down to pick up a rock, and then I look up, and I have a friend that was with me. I haven't contacted her in a long time, but she saw it too, and I look up, and this bird is just soaring, and like I said, it just looked prehistoric, nothing like I've ever seen before, and I've been collecting rocks ever since I was a kid, and I went on to Animal Planet to look up some more stuff on this Thunderbird, and it said that, I don't know if this has any relation to it, but it said that some people said that it would capture little kids. Some people
it's been known to want to swipe and take a kid.
Right, so now that's all making sense to me. Like, I was a kid at the time, but I wasn't scared, like I said, and I've been telling this story
Julie, what would you do if this bird came down, grabbed you, and started flying away with you?
Well, that I don't know. The only thing I know is what I experienced, and that was just so...
What a horrible thought.
Soaring.
Can you imagine, Ken, a parent watching their little kid being taken away by a huge bird?
Oh, yeah, horrifying. But we do have accounts like this, in different history books and so forth. So apparently it has happened at times in the past.
Up to the nest it goes, feeding the little kid to its probably little infant, or maybe for themselves. Oh, well, at least we don't have to worry about it yet. You know, with this day and age of all these cameras, cell phones and things, we should get some pictures eventually, don't you think?
I would think so, and that's really one of the more baffling aspects to some of these mysteries is, you know, with all the phones that are out there now, or camera phones and so forth, why hasn't someone gotten a picture? And moreover, George, with all of these camera traps, you know, hunters are always putting out these motion-activated cameras, you know, to try to capture pictures of deer and other animals. It seems like there are thousands of those out there in the woods of North America right now. How come no one's getting a picture of Bigfoot on one of those cameras?
That's a good point, and we both agree there's some kind of creature out there. Stick with us. We're going to come right back. Final phone calls and stories on Coast to Coast AM. Some real science on our next Coast to Coast program with Charles Seif as we talk about decoding the universe. So that'll be our next Coast to Coast program when we come back. Final phone calls, final stories with Ken Gerhard on Coast to Coast AM. Ken Gerhard, of all the creatures you've investigated, which one seems to fascinate you the most?
Well, I guess I'm probably most fascinated with the flying creatures.
Yeah.
I've just collected so many reports, and there seem to be, well, even tonight, several of your callers that called in, you know, obviously very passionate about what they saw.
Sure.
This is something that's not in the science books that we don't have a definitive explanation for. And, there seem to be patterns that are emerging with regard to these animals, whatever they are. So, of course, the great wealth of material in the Native American Thunderbird legends. So, and it's been kind of an area of specialization for me over the years. So I would probably say the Thunderbirds.
Where do you think they live?
My personal feeling is that, if we're talking about things that are flying over North America, that, you know, you would have to look for a wide, vast area of wilderness for these things to live. And in that scenario, I think we'd be dealing with, or considering some of the mountain ranges throughout Mexico, for example. You have very remote mountains in the Sierra Madres. You have very high remote mountain peaks in the Rockies and in the western United States. And, you know, biologically speaking, something as enormous as a thunderbird would probably choose to spend most of its time in these high mountain ranges where it could take advantage of the different thermals and updrafts and so forth to stay airborne.
Really too big for a tree. Could you imagine seeing one of them in a tree?
Well, yeah. No, people have.
Yeah. As big as the tree.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Terre Haute, Indiana. Lloyd's turn now on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Lloyd.
Hi, George. Hi,
Hi.
Mr. Gerhardt.
Hey.
Thanks for taking my call. My wife and I are longtime Coast fans.
Thank you, both.
I had a story back in the late 80s, early 90s. I was stationed in the Air Force up near Marquette, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And I was driving home on leave one time on a remote road. I think it was M28. They call it the Seamy Stretch. It's about 10 miles. It's nothing but cedar swamps on either side. And as I was driving along up ahead of me in the road, it looked like, I thought it was a wolf in the road. They have wolves up there, so it didn't really occur to me it was anything strange. And as I got closer to it, I noticed it was pretty large. And I slowed down, and the thing was probably as large as a man, if not a little bit larger. And the way that it sat like an ape. And it was larger in the front than in the rear end. And it had real coarse fur on its front half, and it was kind of gray-colored. Most of its features were kind of canine, but like I said, it was really large, and it kind of looked at me and as I was approaching, and it sauntered off the road as though it didn't really want to, but it was going to let me go. And it walked like an ape. It didn't walk like a dog. And it didn't really dawn on me that until after it passed it, because it was like 2 or 3 in the morning, and I was kind of in a zone driving. But after I passed it, it kind of dawned on me, like, what the heck was that? And, of course, I locked the doors and sped up. But about 2 years ago, I guess, I was sitting in a doctor's office reading a magazine, and I think it was Popular Science, and there was a little sidebar story that told of a lady in Upper Michigan that had seen this creature, and she described the same thing and had a drawing of it, and it was exactly what I saw. So I kind of thought if I was a nut, there was at least two of us, you know. But I don't know if you've heard of anybody seeing anything like that. Like I said, it was fairly large. It was larger than a wolf. I know they have wolves up there, but and it didn't walk like one. It walked more like an ape. And I don't know if you've heard anybody else see anything like that, or what do you think it might have been?
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, what you've described is known as the Michigan Dogman.
Oh, really?
And it has been described. There's a lady named Linda Godfrey who has written a book about werewolf-type creatures in Wisconsin and Michigan, and they're very similar in description to what you're describing. You know, very pretty much a canid, but also having certain ape-like characteristics as well. And you said it was walking upright?
Well, it wasn't exactly upright. Like I said, it kind of walked like an ape. It walked with its hind end lower and its front.
Oh, I got you. Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of like it was more supporting itself with its front two legs than really walking on them, but it didn't get upright and walk. But it was fairly large, and like I said, when it looked at me, it looked at me as though I was bothering it. It didn't really want to get up and move, but it would, you know. But like I said, after I'd passed it, you know, when you're driving along at 2 in the morning and kind of zoned out, it didn't dawn on me or really register until after I passed it. It was like, holy crap.
Yeah, well, it's very compelling that we have descriptions like yours from areas like Michigan and Wisconsin, but not necessarily all over the country. They seem to be concentrated in that area, which I think is very interesting.
Yeah, it was something. And the Mothman thing, I'm from West Virginia, and my wife and I took a trip to Point Pleasant and kind of explored that. And we're fixing to take a camping trip. You can camp in that wildlife area. We're going to go back there, I think, later this summer and camp. And that hopefully we see something.
Well, it's a very spooky place.
It is, with all those igloos and that forest area around there. It is really, really spooky.
Absolutely. Yeah,
okay.
I got a really
Thanks.
Eerie feeling when I was up there in March.
Indeed. A couple more questions to go here. Let's go to Elkhart, Indiana. David, you've been waiting. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you guys this morning?
Okay, thanks.
Hey. That's really weird. Your last caller called in about Michigan. I grew up in northern Michigan. And if I could, I've been lucky enough to see two different animals, if that's what you want to call them. The first one, to go along with your last caller, me and my buddy, we were probably 16, bored, you know, one night in the summer, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, and there was an old abandoned building down the street. We decided to climb up on top of it and, you know, just mess around like kids do, see what's going on. And we climbed up there, and I looked out in the parking lot. It was an old abandoned, you know, parking lot of this building. It's a really rural area, you know, it was a business out in the middle of nowhere. And this wolf come walking up, and I'm a pretty big guy now. I'm like, you know, 200 pounds, pretty stocky. And I'm telling you, this wolf looked like me on all fours. Like, going, like, I was on all fours. We used to do this thing called a bear crawl in football practice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how this thing walked. And its arms and its shoulders and on the back was just huge. I mean, muscles just huge. Like, it was a weightlifting wolf. And it kind of looked up at us, and it took off running. And then we didn't come down off the building until the morning, until it got light out. It scared us that bad. And it still petrifies me. I spent a lot of time out in the woods fishing and hunting, and then it kind of turned me off from hunting and fishing for a year or two because of that. In that area, it scared me so bad. The second thing that I seen, I was in the same area. This is outside of Manistee National Forest. And I'm coming home from work one night. I worked second shift. This is probably 11:30, 12 o'clock at night on a dirt road. And I had an older Dodge truck, probably late 70s Dodge, full-size truck. And there's that a bird in the middle of the road. No lie, it was as tall as the hood of the truck. It was that tall. And it was so large, it had a hard time getting off the ground. And I'm just moving along in my truck. I got so close to it. I mean, it was probably 10 feet out in front of my truck before it started to go up.
Hmm.
And it was black and white. And I remember seeing the feet. They were, you know, how like a red-tailed hawk's feet are. They have, you know, very large, very sharp talons. But the feet, the talons on it were bigger than my hand. That's how big a talons is. And it was the wingspan. This is a dirt road, you know, it's not a highway or a major road or anything. But the wingspan on this bird covered the whole width of the road. I know for a fact.
That's a big bird.
From I don't know if you've ever been on Michigan gravel roads, but usually on either side, like the last caller explained, it's usually cedar swamp or.
And that's about 20, 25 feet across, isn't it?
I'd say 16, 18, somewhere in there. And it probably stood 5 feet high, maybe.
Wow. What was its head white and body black? Or when you say it was black and white, how was
it? It was
colored?
Mainly white.
Okay.
With black, let's say, speckles through it. And then the tail and the wings had black tips on it.
Hmm.
And it, you know, like your guest says, it was very raptor. Like, you know, I know my animals. I've been hunting and fishing a long time, and you know, it wasn't a crane. It wasn't a buzzard. We have a lot of turkey buzzards up there, and it, you know, turkey buzzards are all black. And I've talked to DNR about it, and they said it could possibly have been a great owl, but the head on this thing, it didn't. You know, an owl doesn't really have a neck, you know.
No, you can't, or you can't see it.
Right, right. And, you know, they're more shorter and compact built. The neck on this was longer, but I didn't get a good look at the face of it. But there's no way it was an owl. But this, I haven't really told too many people about either one of these things because, you know, people think you're nuts. You know, you've seen a wolf bigger than you and a bird bigger than I am. So, and I just wanted to know what you guest thought about, especially the wolf. I mean, I have seen things on the Michigan Dog Man. I think it was on Monster Quest. They had a special about it. And how frequent are these sightings? I mean, are they pretty frequent? I'm beginning
to find
out.
They go in waves.
Uh-huh.
Kenny?
This was, the bird was probably in 98, 99, and then the wolf was a little earlier. I think I seen that in probably 96, 95.
Yeah, they do come in waves, which actually makes a lot of sense if you were, you know, considering that it might be an animal that was simply passing through a certain area. Perhaps it's not always native to that region, but it just is moving through, and a lot of people tend to see it around that time. But Yeah, the Michigan Dogman reports have been going on for many years, and I believe even the indigenous people of Michigan had legends of similar types of creatures.
It would be exciting, I think, to see one of these huge birds. It really would, as long as it's not trying to rip the roof of my car off or something like that.
I'd love to see one, for sure.
Yep, sure would. Thanks, David. Let's go to Trevor in Yakima, Washington. Hi, Trev.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
Hey.
Interesting about the Bigfoot thing, I live around here in Yakima, and my mother-in-law had both Patterson and Gimlin in grade school.
Ah.
And whenever I bring up the subject, she says they were great students, nice kids, and she could not imagine them ever growing up and pulling off a stunt like this. So I don't understand why there's not somebody's character put into play and went believing some of these films out there. And I know a lot of people around this area have witnessed these Sasquatch. They go up hunting, and some of them will walk off with their deer that they've shot. And there's areas like in the south side of Mount Adams that is supposed to be full of these creatures. And there's a lot of Native Americans who have mentioned that. So it's hard for me, you know, and there's some spots in Natchez and way up as you're going up towards Mount Rainier and some of these areas. At one time, there were 30 people who saw one of these things walking alongside the road. And this thing would just look down at them at their car walking alongside the road. And I remember driving up here from Tennessee one time, going through Idaho, couldn't figure out why this guy was walking alongside of the road in a hoodie. He was huge. And I thought, my gosh, it was like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And I never dawned on me, holy cow, that could have been one of those creatures walking alongside the freeway.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just, I don't understand why people are just so trying to disprove this Patterson-Gimlin film. My mother-in-law says these kids would never pull off a stunt like this. She couldn't imagine they ever would.
Why do you think they would try to do that, Ken?
Well, I don't. You know, and I think they've gotten a lot of criticism. I've met Bob Gimlin on several occasions and spoken with him, and he's one of the most credible people that you could ever talk to. He certainly didn't believe in Bigfoot at the time. He was out with his friend Roger Patterson, kind of roped him into going on this Bigfoot hunt. And you know, I equate it to like winning the lottery. I mean, they were out there looking for Bigfoot, and lo and behold, they were in the right place at the right time, and they rode up on one. And now Patterson's character has come into question a little bit because he was a little bit of a showman and was admittedly trying to make some money off of selling Bigfoot books and so forth. But, you know, they really didn't make very much money, and their reputation was hurt quite a bit in the long run. So, you know, I don't think they had really any motive to fake this, and I certainly can attest to Bob Gimlin's character. He was not involved in any type of fakery.
Bob's in Fridley, Minnesota, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Bob.
Hi, good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Good evening.
This is my very first time I ever called in, and I wanted to call in because I wanted to tell you guys what I saw last fall.
All right, go for it.
I am a retired deputy sheriff, and I had to take my sister-in-law to work in Brainerd, Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
which is northern Minnesota. And I always liked to take the back roads. So I would take the back roads through the cornfields. And as I was driving, about a mile and a half, I could see something very tall standing alongside of the road. And I couldn't for the life of me figure out, well, what the heck is this thing? So I locked my doors on my van. And my van, from the roof to the ground, is about 6'4". 6.4 inches high.
Okay.
And I drove up closer to this, and I thought it was a man, a very tall man.
Taller than your van, no doubt.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Yeah.
And had a trench coat on. That's what I thought it was. And as I got closer, it wasn't. It was a bird. And this bird was, its pelicans were into eating out chunks of meat.
Ugh.
Now, it wasn't eating. It was
just
literally
tearing.
Taking chunks of meat out of this deer.
Mm.
As I approached closer to this animal, I didn't have any of my weapons with me, and I could just kick myself because I would have been able to bring you a bird.
A big bird, and what a Thanksgiving that might have been.
Oh, it would have been an interesting Thanksgiving. But as I got closer, the bird looked at me, and I thought, okay, here we go. I'm going to probably get killed. And it took off. And it took off with half of the deer. And when it took off, I would guesstimate that its wingspan was from point to point 27 to 29 feet.
Wow, what a description. Ken, we're out of time. That's one of the greatest Thunderbird stories I've ever heard.
Oh, that's amazing, but not inconceivable. I mean, people have described these things as having wingspans as large as a small airplane.
Absolutely remarkable. Ken Gerhardt, thanks so much. Fascinating night on cryptozoology. For Dan Galante, Will Wilkerson, the birthday boy, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.